Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world.
Drag queens save the world.
RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount+, and for the first time ever...
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
Eight iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay it forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame. RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and happy Wednesday if you're watching or listening on Wednesday when we record this. If not, welcome in to the Go 24/7 podcast, wherever you might be getting this, whether it's YouTube, whether it is Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you. Make sure you continue to follow and support us on those channels as well. My name is Bryce Kuhn alongside Glenn West. Glenn, a lot going on. We're going to have to, this is going to be a little halvesies podcast we'll talk about. We're going to talk some baseball, I guess, and that'll be interesting. Then we're going to talk football as well, spring football entering the second to last week of spring practice, kind of the halfway point this week as we record this on Wednesday, still practice on Thursday, and then another full practice that you and I get to partake in. We're not actually practicing, but we get to see.
No, that would be a disaster. That would be a bloodbath if we were partaking in the practice.
Although we did joke the other day, we said if they did ask you to come be the guy that like stands up at the line of scrimmage and quarterbacks have to throw around you, that could be a part of the development process. Maybe we should talk to Joe Sloan about that.
Maybe.
That could be something. I don't see myself being, you know, capable at 5'11" to really kind of help anywhere in that vicinity. But hey,
you'd be a good tackling dummy. Be a good live
That would be a business choice. I'd have to have some NIL money to be able to agree to that. Spring football, obviously kind of in full swing here. Well, we have a week and a half left of that. Baseball is where we're going to start this thing, Glenn. You know, I don't know if it's our fault. I don't know if we just teased because basketball season kind of got a little long in the tooth there of saying, hey, baseball's coming up. And this is just kind of the baseball gods doing this to us. But LSU baseball's struggling. And I think that the sample size is now large enough. I am one of those guys, especially when it comes to the sport of baseball, Glenn, I'm more of the optimist. I say, hey, well, let's get a larger sample size to be able to kind of, you know, judge where this team is at. I think through the first couple series, now the first three series of SEC play, Glenn, we can say this team has some issues. It reared its ugly head in the midweek game earlier on Monday against Southern. I do want to say this, give credit to Southern. They came to play. They punched LSU in the mouth. I think it's more of the way they lost. Four hits and just not a lot of fire in the belly of what you've seen, especially last year. I know you talked with Jay Johnson after that game. You've obviously, you know, covered a lot more as I've had kind of the women's basketball piece kind of going on over the past week and a half. Your thoughts, though, on his comments on the character, maybe the passion and just the overall mood of this locker room as they head into – a weekend series against Vanderbilt that a lot of people had circled, but now, I mean, it's win every single series or maybe not be able to host the rest of the way.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're in a really bad spot right now in terms of their mindset, in terms of how they're approaching, you know, every day, in terms of what Jay Johnson wants out of this team. I think the last time we recorded a pod and talked baseball was right before the Florida series, and you know, you were coming off a Mississippi State loss, but you know, you were still, I think. The feeling on this team was still, the jury was still out on this team in terms of how, you know, well or how, you know, poorly this start would be able to carry over. And you've seen it here over the last couple of weeks. They have just, you know, they've cratered. There's really no other way to put it. They just have not played well. They've not responded well in any of the facets of the game. And I think the biggest surprise to me has been the pitching staff. I mean, I think for most of the non-conference, I think you and me and a lot of the people covering, even a lot of people watching, thought that this could be a really legit staff, and you know, thought that this was going to be the one angle of LSU's team that would help carry them through some of the struggles. And bullpen's been hit a lot. I mean, this was a bullpen game this past Monday against Southern. They got absolutely rocked by, you know, Justin Lohr and Cade Anderson, the freshman, the promising freshman. He got hit for a 3-run homer that really kind of gave, you know, Southern some early life and hope in that game that they could win it. And, you know, Christian Little couldn't even get an out. And then Justin Lohr gave up some big hits. And they were just powerful hits, too. I mean, it wasn't just like hits that snuck by an infielder or snuck, you know, kind of just found a soft spot in the outfield. It was like drilled. Like, I mean, there was a 2-run homer in there. There was a double off the wall. I mean, there was a lot there that you know, you could really point to and kind of be concerned about. But yeah, look, and then my whole thing here over the last couple of weeks, I mean, I know the bullpen is struggling. I know the star pitching has been up and down, but it's been really the offense to me. And it's really not even about guys getting on base, because they are getting on base. They're getting guys on first and second with no outs, with one out. But they're just, the inability to bring them home has been just really, really concerning, because, I mean, you've done a good job, I think, of getting, you know, drawing free passes. That's been a staple of Jay Johnson's teams. They've done that a pretty well, I think, here for the last couple of weeks. But they're striking out a ton. They're hitting into double plays. I mean, Tommy White, who was probably your most clutch hitter last year, he's hit into 10 double plays this year. And, you know, a lot of them have been inning killers. They've been with guys on base. They've been, you know, with scoring opportunities. And it's just a real kind of turn, like a 180 turn from what we saw last year out of Tommy. And so, when you have even your best hitters that are kind of going through it and kind of struggling the way they are, you know, it's just not been a very good last couple weeks for the program. It's as down as I've seen Jay Johnson look since he got to Baton Rouge. You know, he's going through it right now, and I think he was on his his weekly radio show the other day. He said he was up till 2:15 in the morning or something. He didn't leave the office until 2:15 on Monday after the game, because I mean, it's just, you got to figure out something. You got to try something. I think that they've really been working a lot of these different, you know, lineups and rotations, and nothing seemed to stick so far. And, you know, now you're getting into the point of the season here where there is very, very, very little margin for error. I would contend there's really no margin for error if they want to kind of salvage this thing and be the team that I think a lot of people thought they could be at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think coming out of that Mississippi State series, a lot of us felt, and I will say I felt like this, hey, that was a Mississippi State team that wanted to prove a point that they were going to be back, you know, after a really down year last year. The Florida series, you look at it, okay, Sunday gets out of hand, but you probably should have won Saturday, so you should have taken 2 out of 3. Now, you didn't. That's the reality. And then this past weekend was, look, I know, Glenn, and I looked at it before, like I know that Arkansas's pitching is unbelievable. Like, it's great. But their offense in SEC play like has not been amazing, and you still couldn't really get the job done. Now, I think there were some – on this team, there are some bright spots. Like, there are some pieces where you're like, hey, Luke Holman, like, he's a good player. Like, he's a good pitcher. He's going to give you a chance. I think the biggest difference, and like what you said, what makes it is this offense. Because even when you go back to last year, and it kind of got to the point of where, okay, Friday night you're probably going to win. Because you throw Paul Skeens. Like, if you don't win Friday night, then you're in trouble the rest of the weekend. And as they were trying to tinker with that kind of weekend rotation, figure out what those guys could do, and guys like Ty Floyd and Thatcher Hurd were trying to prove their worth, you know, Saturday and Sunday kind of became this, let's just hope we can take one. Right now, I feel like if you don't win on Fridays in SEC play, there's not a lot of light at the end of the tunnel thinking that you can win. Now, they may not say this in the locker room. This is more maybe what the fans are saying and what the media is saying. I just feel like there's not a lot of, you know, light at the end of the tunnel that you can win on Saturdays and Sundays with the current pitching that you have and the lack of offense. Because on Fridays, you're going to get a pretty daggum good performance from Luke Holman. The problem is if he blinks, you may not win on Fridays.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't think he blinked against Arkansas. I mean, he gave up two runs, and, you know, I think he'd have his best stuff, and he was able to kind of pitch himself out of a lot of tough situations. But, I mean, you were still in a position there where you probably should have won that game because Griffin Herring came in and gave you just three or maybe even four really, really great relief innings there. They go scoreless over those final three or four innings, and it was the same deal. Like, LSU's offense just kind of cratered after the fourth or fifth inning there, where they they couldn't generate any kind of offense. And you know, they've tried a number of different things. They've tried to go small ball. They've tried to put these freshmen in, and they've, you know, tinkered with, you know, putting Ashton Larson and Jake Brown and a couple of these other young guys that maybe haven't had the opportunities. You know, early in the year, nothing has seemed to stick so far. And I think that the fact that you're 9 games into SEC play and you don't really have a good feel for how this thing should look offensively in the field, that is a concern for sure. And, you know, when we asked Jay Johnson, like, I think it was probably a month ago, you know, at this point, how do you feel about kind of your outfield rotation? And do you like the idea of rotating 5 or 6 guys into that, you know, kind of lineup throughout the course of a week? And he said, yeah, I think that can be a strength of our team. Well, it hadn't been a strength of the team so far these last couple of weeks in SEC play. Now, it doesn't seem like anybody's in a rhythm at the plate. You know, they've had, you know, some bright spots. I mean, I think, you know, Braswell's had a couple of good games here and there at the plate. You know, Tommy has certainly had some really good games at the plate in conference play, the Mississippi State series. I mean, and he was really strong. But some of your other veteran guys, you know, Travinsky struggled, Pearson struggled. They don't really have a whole lot of opportunity for Milazzo these last couple weeks. I think maybe that's something you should explore going forward. But really, for me, I think coming into the season, what we all thought in terms of the position player side of things, we really needed to see that group of sophomores, those guys that were there last year, that saw it, that were a part of a championship team and contributed early in the season to a championship team. We were hoping that a lot of those guys would make the strides, and they've been very mixed results so far. I think of that core four of Paxton Kling, Brady Neal, Jared Jones, Ethan Fry, I think kind of the only one you can say without a doubt has taken a good positive step forward has been Jones. I think he's been very, very strong for you for the most part. His strikeouts are down. He's putting the ball in play for the most part. I like what he's done, but I mean, it's gotten to a point here where, I mean, Paxton Kling's almost unplayable, and he's probably the best defensive outfielder
And he just can't be trusted at the plate right now, unfortunately. And you know, that's kind of where we're at with him. Brady Neal, very up and down at the plate. He has games where he gets on base four times, and he has games where he strikes out three times as well. So like there's just a lot of inconsistency throughout the roster right now. I don't know of any good answers. And then that's a long-winded way of saying like things are bad, and I don't know that even Jay Johnson has, you know, kind of a clear picture of what he wants to do going forward. I think he just has to kind of keep throwing things at the wall and hope that something sticks here sooner than later. And it really has to start this weekend against Vanderbilt.
Yeah. Some interesting stats that I was looking at last night before we recorded this, Glenn, was, you know, a lot of people look at the box score and they see the batting averages, they see the stats, and a lot, you know, remember that's cumulative of the whole season. It's a lot of LSU beating up on inferior competition. When you get inside SEC play, and I know this guy has been much criticized, you know, at times because of maybe some defensive miscues. Michael Braswell is batting .393 in SEC play. Yeah. Like this is a guy who a lot of people said, hey, the hit tool is the only thing that's really not there for him when he was at South Carolina. And yeah, there's not a lot of power. I mean, no home runs, but he is, you know, slugging .500. He's got an OPS of, you know, over 1,000, .393. He has been a bright spot. Mac Bingham, .275. But listen to this. Jared Jones, .265. Tommy White, .263. Pearson, .250. Travinsky, .250. And then you get down to Stephen Milam and Brady Neal. They're below that Mendoza line, .167 and .100.
Yeah.
Here's my thing, Glenn, is like, one of the biggest takeaways for me is if the sophomores weren't going to step up, the onus was going to be on the freshmen.
Yeah.
And I like Stephen Milam. I think he's going to be a good player for LSU. The weight was should have never been on his shoulders to begin with to carry this offense. Like that's kind of where I sit with it. What he gave you during the non-conference portion of the season was exciting. There were always going to be growing pains. It's just being magnified now because no one else is doing anything. And so now it's on a guy like him who, you still remember, he's, what, 23 games, 25 games into his college baseball career, and he's being asked to carry one of the top – an offense on one of the top perceived teams in the country. You keep going down the list. I'll end my portion of the conversation with this. I think you're going to see – I ask you, at what point, if this team keeps struggling, do you see guys like, and we started to see a little bit, Jake Brown, Ethan Fry, Ashton Larson, get more of an opportunity to get more consistent at-bats because it says, hey, we've got to develop these guys for the future. We can't roll into next season with so much inexperience on the field. That's not a knock at what guys like Josh Pearson have done for this program at all. Like, they've done great things. My question is just, at what point do these young guys say, hey, struggle or not, we're going to get these growing pains, try to get them out of the way here in this season. Not saying it's a lost season, but just that development aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to walk that line right now, and it's just really not working. Nobody's been a consistent starter in terms of those guys, those handful of players that you mentioned. And I think at some point you start to, if you're a player, you start to think, all right, well, if I go 1-for-4 today, if I go 0-for-4 today, am I not going to be in the lineup for the next 2 days? And do you press, and especially for a young player, like Ashton, Jake Brown, like some of these guys, Ethan Fry, who is he had a really great week a couple weeks ago, and then he followed it up with the 0-for-6 with 5 strikeouts kind of game, and he wasn't in the lineup the next day. There's so much inconsistency right now that I think probably the first step is trying to figure out this weekend if you can find a lineup that just works, that you can throw out there for 2 games, not even just, you know, 1 game. It's just 2 games. Can you figure out a lineup that you like for 2 games that can maybe help you win a series? And I just don't know that they're there yet. So like that's going to be the biggest thing for me offensively and at the position side is, you know, who are the 9 players that Jay Johnson trusts most right now? And I don't know that, I'm not even sure there are 9, but you know, you gotta throw 9 out there. And I think we'll see that kind of indicated here in the first couple games against Vanderbilt. See if you can't try to steal a series. At this point, you're not favored in many series going forward. You're 2-7. You're in a bad spot. But I do think that you know, this team is not devoid of talent. I think they have talent. No. I think they have every opportunity to turn this thing around, but has to start with the mindset. It has to start with finding some consistency at the plate. And then you kind of, you know, you kind of work from there. But those are just kind of our mostly negative, but hopefully optimistic thoughts going into a Vanderbilt week that you have to have.
Well, I do want to highlight the one big positive. Griffin Herring has been very, very good in SEC play. 10 innings of work. He's struck out 14. He's only walked 2. I know that's going to be music to a lot of LSU fans' ears. You know, when you look at that strikeout to walk ratio, 0.90 ERA. He's been good. You know, opponents hitting 229 off of him. So that is something where I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's that's been good. The rest of the bullpen's been terrible.
The mindset, character, concentration, focus aspect of this is where I think you have to see the growth for this team in a hurry.
Yeah.
Because Jay talked about it on Monday in his coach's conference or coach's weekly deal he does on Tuesday. He talked about players not having the phones in the locker rooms and just kind of keeping the digital stuff away from the players as they're trying to get this thing back on track. So we'll see if any of this sticks, but you know they've got to get that mindset and you know, just belief that this season is not over already. Like it's not over. Like they can still kind of work their way back here if they can get on a hot streak and get playing more consistently and better. But you know it's going to take a lot to get there, and you know I just don't know right now if they have a whole lot of the answers on how they're going to do that.
I agree with you. I think I'll end it with this. I don't know if it's an overnight thing. You know, I don't know. I don't think this is an overnight thing. I think it's at the point now where it's, you know, I don't know if you can play through a lot of the issues they have. We'll see. We'll see. But obviously the focus standpoint is a big one. Okay. So moving on to a new sport. If you made it through the first 19 minutes of this episode, we applaud you for doing that. Now we're going to talk about some spring football, which we're definitely, at least I'm not a sunshine and rainbows guy. I don't like to pump the sunshine, but Glenn, a lot of things to be excited about when it comes to spring football. We got the chance to talk with Joe Sloan yesterday. Loved that. Like in my time of covering college football, that was one of the best coordinator / assistant coach type things I've ever sat in on. The wealth of information. If you haven't already, make sure you can YouTube and you can find that LSU Sports, the official LSU YouTube channel has that one up. It was great. Like talking with Joe Sloan was absolutely phenomenal. Tons of information. Glenn, I know that we didn't get a lot in terms of the 20-minute practice session. Just kind of some of your big overall takeaways. I know we've written about a couple of these things on the site that people can go check out. But just what was your takeaway from Joe Sloan? And as spring ball kind of enters the second to final week, is they're in the middle of it. Just your thoughts on how this group has progressed.
Yeah, I mean, just a really, like you said, just a really informative 25 minutes that we got with Sloan. I mean, he really went detailed on a lot of the questions that were asked about, various position groups, various coaches. You know, he talked a lot about the emphasis on the run game and how, you know, it's been a real collective effort in terms of the coaching staff and everybody working together to incorporate more outside zone and more run schemes here that, I think LSU is going to try to lean into this off season. And that to me, I think was probably the biggest takeaway. We're going to have a story on that on, I believe on Thursday, about all these coaches working in cohesion with getting the run game. You know, when you lose a guy like Jaden Daniels, that's a rushing attack all in and of himself. So how you go about replacing that production or getting as close to replacing that production, I think is going to be a real telltale sign of how successful this offense can be from a complementary aspect with what Garrett Nussmeier can do with the passing game. So that has been a real emphasis for this offense, and it was nice to hear Joe Sloan go into some great detail about that. He was asked a number of times about the quarterback spot. I mean, that's something that's a position that he's worked in for the last 3 years with Nuss, and has really gotten a chance to kind of know him and know kind of what they feel like his best way to impact the game is going to be. And, you know, it's been a little bit more technique stuff, I think, for Nussmeier this off season, as opposed to past off seasons. You know, he comes in knowing that he's the guy. And I think that was really good for him and good for, But the big thing that I think he talked about with Garrett was that they want him to be a little bit more just kind of aware of what the what the particular play is going to be giving, like what the defense is going to be giving him, and making sure that he's taking those chances when needed, but not overdoing it. He's done a really nice job of that. I think these first couple of weeks that we've seen, he's leading the team in a really nice way. But I do think that he's done a really, that Joe Sloan is a guy that you can see why Brian Kelly wanted to keep him and wanted to keep most of this offensive staff intact when they lost Mike Denbrock this past offseason. I think that he and a lot of these coaches, Brad Davis and Cortez and Frank Wilson, they've all been working really well together. And I think that now you can really kind of see all these different guys, kind of be thrust into more prominent roles. And, I think it's going to really help the offense in the long term, having some continuity from last year. And I think Sloan heading that is as good a coach and a person that you could ask to be doing that for LSU this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think continuity is something that Brian Kelly has harped on, that this program needed ever since he got here. They had to establish, and then they had to bring in that consistency year in, year out. And, that process is not something that just takes one offseason. And we're seeing, I think, too, Glenn, in different position rooms, they're there. One of the biggest ones is offensive line. Like, it is feels like a juggernaut when it comes to type of offensive line group and the talent and depth they have there. Wrote a piece on DJ Chester and just his development. And I think it's just super impressive to see a guy who is, just in one full year under his belt and feels like he can take charge and have a leadership role amongst, arguably four NFL talent guys beside him. I mean, we know what Campbell and Turner are, but, the two guys at the guard positions, I think those guys can be some NFL rotational guys too. So, to be able to do that is massive. There's still some other rooms, though, Glenn, that I think need that. They need that depth. They've got the coach there, and I think the two biggest ones for me is defensive line and then probably running back. Running back is just kind of this weird conundrum of so many different things happening at once, But I do think that as Caleb Jackson becomes more of a complete back, good grief. I mean, the things that we saw him do just based off of his athletic prowess alone last year, if he comes more of a complete back, you're talking about a guy that could be one of the best in the country, I think, just potential-wise.
Yeah.
And the defensive line.
Yeah.
Or go ahead.
No, I mean, yeah, he's super talented. He's been running mostly with the second team. You've had Josh Williams running with the first team at running back for the most part. And, it's part of the story that I'm going to write for Thursday. Just a little teaser. I mean, like the thing that I think really stood out to me when we were watching that first full practice, when the offensive line was able to open up a number of holes on the right side with Tyree Adams and Miles Frazier, because Emory Jones was not practicing and with the full on 11-on-11 periods. But when they opened up holes for Josh Williams, he was hitting them hard. And there was one play in particular where I just remember, as soon as Josh Williams hit the hole and got into the second level and picked up a huge, huge gain, I immediately, my eyes averted to two voices that were just screaming and hollering and just so enthused. And that was, Joe Sloan and Brad Davis. I mean, those are two guys that are going to be that have worked really well together in constructing this run offense. And, when you see the fruits of your hard work paying off there, that's really, really cool to see. A coaching staff, kind of have that enthusiasm about a play working and about just kind of the direction the offense can go in. So that was just a little side, kind of anecdote there that I picked up on just from watching that first full practice. Hopefully we get some more of that this Saturday when we're able to watch another one.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think as Caleb Jackson learns to become like how to pick up tendencies and understand the fronts, defensive fronts and what they're trying to do. I mean, it's just stuff that as a freshman in college, it's just really hard to kind of figure out on the fly, especially with, I think that they kind of, if you want to liken it to like a wild horse, they had the reins on them. We know what this kid can do, but we need to really kind of build him more complete rather than just an athlete that goes out there, because we know what he can do. Like, if you just hand him the football and go out there and let him play, he's gonna have a certain ceiling, but his ceiling could be higher as he becomes more of a complete back. And then defensive line, like, Bo Davis is the guy. Like, I don't think anyone's doubting here on Wednesday, April the 3rd, that in a couple of years, Bo Davis is going to be a guy that is going to build this defensive line. I mean, I would be shocked, Glenn, if this is not a top defensive line in the SEC, one of the best, you know, one of the top 10 in the country in 2 to 3 years. It's just not right now. And that's more of a personnel thing. That's where my biggest worry comes from. I think that's one of my concerns leaving spring and something they're going to have to address. I know you just threw it up on the board. They obviously brought in the transfer defensive lineman. I think that there's likelihood they're going to need to bring in two more. And I think you and I are kind of the same page of that, is you have to build this to a point of where if you just roll into that game against USC or you roll into play and it just kind of looks the same as like, hey, we have this talent at linebacker, but these guys can't do anything because the defensive front is just getting mauled. That's going to be a big concern for me. And I'm interested to see how they address it, because I think that's one of the things coming out of spring ball is, yeah, this offensive line's really good, but when they go against each other, how much of it is just you have, for lack of better terms, you got a couple guys that can really play and the rest of them, you know, or maybe some walk-ons that are really serving more as bodies for the purpose of these reps.
Yeah, I mean, look, Gio Paez is the Wisconsin transfer that they brought in and have kind of already committed and signed. So he'll be in, you know, this summer. But this second transfer portal window is huge for LSU. And, you know, you don't know who's going to go in there, but I would imagine that if there is, you know, starters across the country that are looking at big-time opportunities with big-time programs, you look at LSU and you say, hey, man, I can go in there and I can play right away and I can be a part of rebuilding a defense and being a part of a team that wants to compete for a college football playoff appearance. That's mighty enticing for, I would say, 95% of players across the country that are on other programs. I mean, you've got the blue bloods that, you know, I don't expect anybody from, you know, some other big time schools to maybe enter and jump to where LSU is, but some teams that are middle of the pack or, you know, that have really quality starters, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if a couple of them hop in there for an opportunity to kind of elevate their level, the level of play for a little bit and see if they can't help get this defense back on track. But I agree completely. I think the biggest thing here with the defensive line is you just want to get some guys in here that can get some push, and that will really help open up things for Perkins, for Whit Weeks, for Greg Penn, for the second level defense there to really make some plays in the backfield. It's something that they didn't do a whole lot of last year. I mean, Wingo, when he was healthy, was pretty good at it, but outside of that, the consistency maybe just wasn't there, which is why I think you would have loved to have had, you know, both him and Mason back for this year. But they have some pieces that they can, you know, continue to develop, continue to work around. I mean, Bo Davis, you walk into the individual part of practice that they give us, the 20 minutes during individual drills, he's flamboyant, man. He gets after his guys, and I think that's exactly what this room needs right now. So it'll be very interesting to see who they, you know, end up targeting and getting out of the portal here in the second window. But I think you need two more. I don't think you come in here with just one more extra piece and think that you're good. You keep in mind, you got Dominic McKinley coming in the summer as well. We'll see if he's ready to contribute early in his career. But I just don't think you can bank on the fact that, you know, a freshman, even as talented as McKinley seemingly is, to be ready right away. And I think it's much more important to bring in some veteran guys, some players with experience at the college level, some college made ready bodies to come in here and really help get this thing back on track.
Yeah, get it right back on track because you've got talent elsewhere. You know, we talk about numbers, you got it on the back end. Excited to see how that works out, especially as Zay Alexander gets healthy. You know, they've pushed Jair Brown a lot. I feel like that's a guy that every time you look over there, Corey Raymond's really coaching him up. And I put this in the practice notes last week. I think it could be a combination of Corey Raymond and this staff sees the talent that this kid has, they've got to get it out of him. Like there's a sense of urgency to say, we see the talent that you have. We know what you had in high school and what you can do. We've got to get this out of you. And then, you know, partially too, it's just like, hey, we got to kind of figure out this rotation. Like JV and Toviano was a great interview last week, just talking about, you know, what that room's been like and just maybe a sense of comfortability that wasn't there last year. And I think that, you know, that's going to be something massive for this group going forward. Because outside of that, Glenn, I mean, secondary is kind of the next big question. At linebacker, you mentioned there's a couple names. You feel good. Blake Baker has a track record. Okay, you know, check that off the box. That should be solid. Secondary is kind of the next big thing with so many faces.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think you look at, you know, there's a couple of positions here where I think there's a grouping of players that you feel like are going to be able to contribute in some capacity. I mean, you look at tight end Mason Taylor, certainly seems like he's ready to have a I don't want to say rebound season, but a better season than maybe he did last year. You know, you look at the offensive line, that's set, quarterback set. I think running back for the most part, you know that Caleb Jackson and Josh Williams are going to work in. Maybe Caden Durham can as well as a true freshman. But yeah, when you look at the secondary, I think one of the mild surprises to me has been the fact that they've kind of settled in on a rotation back there. I kind of figured throughout most of spring, most of those guys would be rotating in with the first team, trying to figure out which guys work best with who. But you know, really, it's been Sage Ryan and Jarden Gilbert are the two deep safeties. They've had Major Burns in that star position closer to the line of scrimmage. And then the two outside corners have been Ashton Stamps and Javian Toviano. Those have been the guys that have all worked with the first team. And there haven't been a whole ton of subs. I mean, I think Brown maybe has gotten in a little bit of first team work. Maybe Jeremiah Hughes, if I'm remembering correctly, has gotten in a little bit of first team work. But those guys have mostly been second team with PJ Woodland and, you know, Sean McBride has been a second teamer. He's somebody that I think you should really keep an eye out for. Deshaun McBride, the true freshman out of Denham Springs, just really long, lengthy, you know, already up to about 200 pounds and just looks physically ready to play the game. We'll see if he's mentally there, you know, by the time fall comes around. Yeah. That's a big part of this thing for freshmen is you got to pick up the playbook pretty quickly. But the physical traits are there, I think, for Deshaun McBride to be able to help this team out in his first year as well. So I think there's a little bit more cautious optimism you can have about the secondary than maybe you had going into it. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're returning a ton of guys and that you're also, you know, bringing in some really strong veterans like Gilbert, who I think will be able to help round the room out a little bit better.
Well, and two, Glenn, to, I guess, to have a little fun with it. It can't be much worse, right? Like that's also
true. That's true.
Too. Like,
at least you hope. At least you hope. I mean,
find some wood and knock on it. Like, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things. You hope that it really can be one of those things that, you know, just progresses to the point of where, okay, if we can play average back there, like if you're an LSU fan, if we can just play average level, that's a step in the right direction. You know, jumping into a top 25 defense, that's a little bold. I think there needs to be better personnel. But if you can get in that top 50 range, okay, now you start feeling better because this is a group that was historically bad last year. And sometimes baby steps is not what everybody wants, but it often can be signs of progression. And that's what, you know, that linear progression that they need. So, you know, look, it's a fun spring practice. Like I said earlier, we're going to get back on the field tomorrow morning. If you're listening to this, we're recording this or watching this on Wednesday. We're going to get back on the field tomorrow or practice field Thursday and then talk with Blake Baker. Some good stuff should be coming out of that conversation as well as we get kind of some insight on this defense. And then Saturday, that full thing, which one is fun because you guys get a little bit different video content instead of the what are we going to call that, Glenn? The bird's eye angle up there and on top of the video. Of watching the same rep every single day. We'll get that. And then
we'll get some special teams on Saturday. They'll throw some special teams at us the first couple periods. I'm sure everybody wants to see that.
We want to see, that. Couple more just small notes before we get out of here because I don't want to go too long, is the wide receiver room, which I thought there were some interesting comments on that, Glenn, in terms of the praise that Xavion Thomas has received in his explosiveness. I think we've all just assumed that, you know, Aaron Anderson's going to be a guy that takes a step up. And Joe Sloan, he complimented Aaron Anderson. But he was, I think they've been impressed with Xavion Thomas, the burst that he has shown on some of these sweep plays, you know, tunnel screens. You know, that's something that I know people were able to see that on social media, that unique drill that LSU's working with, the kind of this tunnel screen and screen plays. Thomas is the real deal. And you know, you mentioned the special teams aspect. He's obviously going to get some looks there. But between him, CJ Daniels, you know, it stood out to me, Glenn, that CJ Daniels was the guy that Jaden Daniels wanted to throw to. I don't know what that relationship's like, but it, I mean,
yeah,
you don't really know the guy, and he stands out as a guy that, hey, I want there, be part of my pro day with 40 plus, 50 plus NFL scouts and coaches there. So I'm excited about the wide receiver room and just how that is. Obviously, we know what Kyron Lacy, Chris Hilton, we've seen the highlight plays. That catch that one of those guys made over Jordan Gilbert was just filthy.
That was a big one.
Kyron Lacy, that was. Yeah, and that's not even on Jordan Gilbert. That was just a great play.
Yeah. And just kind of building on what you said there about Thomas, I mean, he was one of the best, or probably the best option on a pretty putrid Mississippi State offense last year. He had 600 yards and like 6 touchdowns. I mean, if he's doing that for an offense that was, you know, kind of not very good last year in Starkville, I mean, imagine what he can do in this offense. I mean, I think he can absolutely be a big time playmaker for LSU in the slot. Sounds like, I mean, look, they've been working Aaron Anderson with the first team most of spring in that slot role as well. They've been working Kyle Parker in there a little bit. So I think those are kind of the three that you maybe envision getting the most slot reps for LSU come fall. But you know, look, there's a lot of mouths to feed in this offense, and I'll be very interested to see kind of how those rotations look towards the end of spring. I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see CJ Daniels maybe kind of wiggle his way in here towards the end of spring. It sounds like he's had a nice last couple days. Shelton Sampson's also somebody that Joe Sloan made sure to point out at the end of our press conference here that he's had a nice last week and a half or so of practice as well. So
yeah,
lots of mouths that you can potentially, you know, give feed the ball to in this offense and at the skill position spot, but just who kind of asserts themselves here over the next several months is going to be what Joe Sloan and Cortez Hankton have to hash out.
A lot to hash out. Week and a half left of spring ball, with college baseball season continuing to roll, and it's a good reason for you to head on over to Go247, get that subscription, and hang out with us as we get ready to, you know, just unveil a lot of content. Recruiting, transfer portal, ladies and gentlemen, there's never a dull time. There's never a bad time to come hang out with us over at Go247. And I'll go ahead and preview this. If you are a late night or early riser, come hang out with me on the boards around June, July. Around 2 a.m., we're going to be welcoming our baby girl into the world, my wife and I, then. So I've already told Sonny and Glenn that I'll be manning the boards, no worries, guys, between 11 p.m. and maybe 5 a.m. And then I might try to catch some sleep around that noon time frame. But, hey, seriously, great time, great community over there. Come join us. And if you're watching this, you just came across this, make sure you hit that subscribe button or follow us wherever you might be listening. He's Glenn West. My name's Bryce Kuhn, and we will catch you next time here on the Go 24/7 podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.